Welcome to the Watch Your Mouth podcast, a podcast about phrase etymology and why we say the things we say. I'm Milo.
And I'm Dave.
He's my dad.
And she is my lovely daughter.
That's how that works.
Yes, it is.
So I kind of lied in the intro.
You did? How so?
So when I formulated this episode, it was kind of backwards because I didn't start with a phrase. I was just laying in bed one night and I had this curious question that popped into my head, as they often do. And I was like, I need to know the answer to this question immediately because there has to be an answer. So I went on a rabbit hole and was like, this seems like it could be an episode. So I started doing the episode, was like, it's not about etymology at all, but who cares? It's fine. We do that sometimes. And then, and then somehow a phrase came out. There was an origin of a phrase in my research. I was like, well, thank you, research gods. You have given me, even though I tried to stray from the path, you pulled me right back onto it. So we will be going in order of my research and getting to the phrase later. But let's start out with that initial question.
Which is, and I don't know this, this is news to me.
This is news to you.
This is real time.
So which side of the road is safer to drive on? Obviously, in the U.S., it's safer to drive on the right because that's the side that everybody else is driving on. Right, but in terms of, you know, some countries, some territories drive on the right, some countries, some territories drive on the left. One of those is probably the safer option, right? Just statistically, that information has to be out there.
Can I ask why you were thinking about this?
To be honest, I don't really remember.
All right. That's fine. I'm just kind of curious if something kind of stimulated that thought.
I think I had seen something. I saw like a clip from a dash cam thing or something. And just the thought popped into my head of like, you know, how does that work? I don't know.
Was it on the TikToks?
I do not watch the TikToks, actually.
Oh, really?
I am strange for being a womanish person in my mid-20s and not watching the TikTok.
You could get arrested for that. I do have the TikTok app, and I do sometimes will watch the TikToks, as the older people call them, because it's kind of right and it's kind of wrong. So yeah, I do watch some of the TikToks, and you can actually find out a lot about somebody by picking up their phone or whatever and watching their TikToks, because it's going to just pick, you know, there's an algorithm at work there, and it'll gravitate towards what they like to watch.
Yes.
So you'll find things out.
It has crawled inside of their mind and discovered all the secret nooks and crannies of what they think about and what they've been talking about and what they've been dreaming about. And then they turn that into content and push it into your head.
And then they monetize it as well.
Yes, of course.
Right? But I don't know how TikTok monetizes it. There's not really ads on it.
I think there's ads.
I don't know. I don't remember seeing ads. Doesn't matter. It's nothing to do with the episode. I'm sorry. Continue, please.
We are not talking about TikTok today. We are talking about cars.
Okay.
And driving specifically, just because I was pretty curious. So when I asked that question, which side of the road is safer to drive on? Do you have like a gut instinct? Is your head telling you one way or the other?
I believe that most of the world does drive on the right-hand side of the road. There's probably a lot more stats of right-hand side of the road. So I'm going to guess that because there's more people driving on the right-hand side of the road, you're going to see more accidents. In the Dominican Republic, which I've been in, at least when I was there, they did not pay much attention to traffic rules. And I can imagine there's all kinds of accidents down there, which is going to kind of skew it. So I would think it would skew it. That means the left-hand side would seem statistically safer. That's
interesting.
My answer.
Okay.
Thank you.
That was actually going to be my next question of which side of the road is more common, but you nailed it. It is the right-hand side, which actually surprised me. For some reason, I was thinking the left-hand side was more common, but it is wildly the opposite. Right-hand driving is 165 countries, and only 75 countries drive on the left.
I'm actually surprised there's that many that drove on the left, because I had thought it was, I knew it was pretty skewed one way or the other. And I found that out a few years ago somehow. And I was surprised. I'm like, oh, I kind of guessed it was about even, but it's not.
It is very not. And you're right. Like 75 seems like a high number. It's 75 countries and territories. But if you look at a map, like there's this color coded map of the countries that drive right versus left, the right is overwhelming the map. Like the territories that are using it, most of them are pretty small. There's only like a few like very large countries that are using it. Most of Southern Africa, India and its surrounding countries, and then kind of the Oceania, Australia and all that. And then kind of the UK all lonely by itself.
You couldn't really have neighboring countries driving on the opposite sides of the road.
You do have some of that. And honestly, that is one of the biggest safety risks with different sides of the road driving, is those points of transfer. But as we'll get to later, there's some places in the world throughout time who have had like individual cities or locations within a city that are opposite, which just seems like a
problem.
Bad idea. We'll talk about some specific examples of that later.
Okay.
But first, let's talk about why we drive on the right here in the US. So you and I are both American, and here we drive on the right, and we always have. Since the colonies were first set up, we've been driving on the right side of the road. So historians think that, honestly, the main onus for this was just spite. Spite against spite? England. Yes, because England, even at that time, drove on the left-hand side. And we were leaving England and pretty mad about it. So we were like, well, we're going to do things differently. We're going to go on the right side.
Okay.
So while historians think that's like the main reason, there were some practical thought to it as well. So if you think of back in the day, Conestoga wagons, which are like those covered wagons, right? In the 1750s in Pennsylvania, those were very popular. They were starting to spread out all over the colonies because they were not necessarily efficient, but they could tow a lot of stuff. They were heavy, they were durable, they could really go a lot of places. And the way that these were being built, there was a seat right behind the left horse, which is called the left wheel horse, because the horses were like correlated to the wheels. And because there, it was right on the left there, if you drove on the right, you could more easily see who was passing the other way and keep a better handle of your horses. It'd be easier to whip them and keep them going from that position.
Yeah, so just to let people know, we do not condone the whipping of horses in this podcast.
No, just we so do you not know. Whip horses on this podcast, but there has been a lot of horse whipping in the past, and sometimes that shows up in the history.
Right.
But there was also on those wagons, which I didn't know this, there was a brake on them. There was a lever mounted brake on the left hand side of the wagons.
I think I've seen that, you know, just in the movie portrayals and things there, they did have a brake. And it was always was they were going, you know, racing towards a cliff and the hero had to come in at the last second and apply the brake that for whatever reason, the person in the on the carriage could not do.
And they drift. And they drift the edge of the canyon.
The old carriage drift. Do not let Vin Diesel or Dwayne The Rock Johnson find out about this, or there will be another movie.
I mean, honestly, drift. I feel like the only logical next step in the Fast and Furious franchise would be for them to time travel to the past and have to do wagon racing.
I love it.
I feel like
that's can you drift a horse? Can you drift a horse?
The Rock can do anything.
Yeah, that's a good point. Sorry. we get off topic. I love the idea of these big carriages drifting, though. Yes, that's fantastic.
It's a lovely visual. I hope somebody's taking notes.
I may have asked you this before, but have you seen any of the Fast and Furious movies?
I have not. I believe we actually talked about them quite a bit during the episode that we had Ellen Baca on.
Did we really? Oh, my gosh.
Quite possibly alienating her further.
Yeah, she won't return any of my emails. That's the darndest thing. None of that's true. That's not true at all. She was very sweet.
Yes, she's a sweet lady. And I so while it was common practice for people in the U.S., even back then, before it was the U.S., to drive on the right, there was no rule about it until 1792. Like, it was just kind of like common practice, but there wasn't actually any law.
Well, and to be fair, though, I mean, if you see someone coming down a road, they're not going that fast. And it's pretty, you're not going to miss that. Some of the cars today are like the size of a Matchbox car, like those little those little Mini Coopers and stuff. Mm-hmm. There's tough. It's tough to miss a carriage drawn by a few horses, and you're going to be like, "Oh, I shouldn't be on the same side." Yeah, and I shouldn't be on the same side as them.
Yes.
That could be a bad thing.
But at the same time, too, it's hard to imagine these roads having clearly demarcated sides at the same time.
Well, that's true, too.
So, because it wasn't like they had the pavement and paint at that time. But in 1792, Pennsylvania finally adopted some legislation to codify this way of driving. But it was only for one specific stretch of road.
Oh, but it started.
Saying that it had to be on the right side. They started implementing fines. And then it wasn't until 1804 that New York became the first state to mandate right side travel on all public roads.
Gotcha.
So time goes on. Eventually, around the time of the Civil War, right-hand travel becomes the law of the land. It's across every state.
All right. And the other thing I think too is with maybe it's kind of surprising to me initially that this took so long to be official recognized law. But the other thing that's true about horses is horses will not run into each other, where cars obviously could go head on. Mm-hmm. If you're not paying attention, they're going to smash. Horses just are not going to run into each other head on very often, I would think. No.
Unless they're mortal enemies.
Which there are a lot of those, surprisingly.
So around this time in the Civil War, when kind of these rules are being set, that's all getting set up, but it's not quite how we picture it, because driver cab, the driver's seat of who's in charge of the horses and the buggy or the wagon or whatever, they were sitting on the right. So they were both on the right side of the road and they were sitting on the right. So curbside, it was so that they could see the ditch better because the lines of the roads weren't well drawn, and so you wouldn't fall into a ditch as easy if you were on that side of the car, or not car, but wagon.
Yeah, so that makes sense.
As cars were being made, they were actually, the driver was being placed on the right, was being placed curbside. So American cars produced before 1910 had right side driver seating and right side driving. It wasn't until the Model T came out that Ford put it on the left. And everyone was like, oh, that's cooler. Let's do that.
Is there a reason? Did you find any reasoning why they switched the driver's seat to the left-hand side instead of the right?
I think it was so that you could see the oncoming traffic better.
Because that was more important than the ditch because, at this point.
Yes, because road quality was improving. So there was less need to have an eye on that and more need to keep an eye on the opposing traffic, especially because things were speeding up and becoming more dangerous.
Yeah. Yep.
So that's where we rest today in the U.S. We still drive on the right. Cars, driver's seats are on the left. It all sorts. But in England, they're still driving on the left and their seats are on the right. So this obviously has a further back history because England had vehicles longer than the states did, or before the states did. So
it actually even
goes back before vehicles.
Oh, you're kidding me.
We go back to, oh boy.
Yeah, doing an English accent just for the sake of
are you? England. Is that what that is?
That's right. It's an English accent. That's what it is. Sorry, I'll stop.
So it actually goes all the way back to swordsmen in the medieval times, where they would be going across these roads on horseback. And it was good to have some kind of structure for these early roads. So it made sense to keep on the left so that they could have their right arm close to their opponents. Since most people are right-handed, it would be easier if something did get violent to be able to be quick to draw. So mounting and dismounting were also said to be easier from the left side of the horse. Most people do that because most people are right-footed as well as right-handed. And so it's easier to kind of swoop that over. I'm not a horse person. Swoop. I don't know what you call that.
I'm pretty sure it's swoop it over.
Yeah. Swoop it over is probably it. It's, and if you're walking alongside your horse, it makes more sense to walk on the side where you can stand between where the other person is going so that the horses don't get spooked. There's people in between the animals so the animals won't get too friendly. So one of the first references in England to requiring traffic direction was in 1669. So they got it on pretty early by the London Court of Aldermen. This made me laugh. So the entirety of this law was they basically just hired a dude to stand on the London Bridge and ensure that all carts kept on one side of when going one way and all carts kept on the other side going the other way. It didn't specify left and right. It just said, make sure that they're not going like in the same lane. So right. It wasn't like it was, they didn't paint any sign that said, hey, go this way. They just had a guy there going, hey.
I wonder how much they paid this guy and I wonder what his name was.
I really hope so too. I wonder how long that job was in effect, because it wasn't until 1773 that they introduced the General Highways Act, which codified driving on the left. So I hope this guy had a long and illustrious career of yelling at other cars, but I doubt he was in the business for over 100 years.
You wouldn't think so, but he's yelling at people in carriages, which of course they're pretty much open air. Yes. So they probably would able to hear him as he's shouting at them.
But also there's a lot of horses clomping around and there's a river. Oh. And
he's got to project.
Yeah, I know. He's probably a thespian. Yeah, I would watch probably. A movie about that guy.
Yeah, absolutely.
A workplace comedy.
Yeah, it's a sitcom now. We just made a sitcom. Fox just picked it up. I just got an email. They're using it. And they want to turn it into a series. So, or Netflix. That would probably be the better reference now. It's going Perfect. To be in
I will Danish. Expect a check in the mail. Oh, it's going to be That's in right. Danish, even though it takes place yeah. in London.
Yeah, mm-hmm. That's right.
Interesting. So in 1773, they introduced the General Highways Act. Everything needs to be driven on the left, And then they further codify it and make the rules more staunch, the punishments more staunch in 1835 with the Highway Act. So they are set in their ways. But around this time in post-revolution France, they were permanently moving to the right side of the road. They were kind of going against the thought of the time. Everyone was kind of shifting over to the right side, even though England was staunchly on the left. So France, because they were so proud of their new right driving ways, they filtered it down to all of their colonies. They required all of their colonies to start driving on the right. And Britain kind of saw this too and was like, oh, we should do that. And so they started making their colonies drive on the left. And so that's actually where we see most of the spread today, is because of colonialism. A lot of the British colonies still drive on the left, Australia included, Papua New Guinea, those kind of places that had a longstanding British rule. And then French colonies were driving on the right. So that's how that kind of trickled out. And then there was definitely the thing where neighboring countries kind of matched to stop. Sure. India, you see the countries around India, because they were under British rule, but they still drive on the left, including India. And then Algeria, Ivory Coast, Senegal, a lot of that South Africa, like we talked about before, they're driving on the right.
Right. Wow. Okay.
So interesting. There's a couple of weird little spots too. Here's a couple of just little strange spots in the world that do things interestingly. So Rotterdam specifically drove on the left-hand side of the road until 1917, even though the rest of the Netherlands has always been right-hand driving. So just this one city, Rotterdam, was for a long time opposite, which had to just be very stressful.
Yeah.
So,
That's nuts.
Sweden didn't change until right-hand driving until 1967.
What? That's the year I was born.
Yeah.
That was in my lifetime.
I was, well, yeah, kind of. I don't have the exact date. Well, no, there is a date. It was in your lifetime because it had occurred on Sunday, September 3rd.
I was just a baby. I was only a few days old.
There's pictures from this.
What?
There's pictures of this event where all the cars are like the exact moment where they like told everybody to switch over, where they like set up a bell or something. I don't know. And so there's pictures of just the chaos. There is just utter chaos. There's people standing in the road. There's cars just like swerving everywhere. I'll put pictures on the Facebook group. Great question. Not entirely sure. I think to kind of match up with the rest of Scandinavia, because the rest of Scandinavia at this point had been right-hand driving for some time. Sweden had been left-hand driving since 1734, so that they were, weirdly, most of their cars, because they were imported, were left-hand drive. So they were
doing it all different.
It was just confusing time, and they were like, we just need to codify this. We want to be the same as our neighbors. We're just going to make this work. So it's actually funny, because immediately after they switch this over, the accident rate dropped like really significantly. And then across the course of 2 years, it rose right back up to where it was.
Oh, good.
So it's definitely one of those things where people, when they're being overly conscious and trying to do a new thing, they tend to do it right. But as soon as you become comfortable, you become worse at it.
instantly lazy. How can I make this as simple as possible and not pay attention? It's second nature.
So this day has a specific name in Swedish that I'm going to try to say, and then I'm going to make you try to say.
Oh boy.
I do not speak Swedish nor any Scandinavian language. Hoga trafikom laganigen. It's literally like 20 letters because I believe Swedish is semi-agglutinative, so words get really long and wild.
Yeah, I don't know what that means, but it sounds impressive, that word you used, the gluten one.
I just sent it over the chat. Would you please try to say that word? And now he's possessed. Possessed with love for Swedish.
Hey.
It's also called Dagen H for short, which seems a lot easier. I think that just means H day.
Here we go. Haga trafikum lagningen.
You can definitely read traffic in there.
Yeah. Haga trafikum lagningen.
Yep. That's
what I'm going for.
So you can celebrate this next year on September 3rd. You can celebrate Dagen H.
Great. I like it.
The Swedish traffic reversed.
And I wonder how you'd celebrate that, actually. I don't know.
By driving on the wrong side of the road, obviously.
It's going to be a dangerous holiday, but, you know, tradition's important.
The purge. This is an example of, like, political motivation for changing the sides. Both North and South Korea switched to right-hand driving in 1946 after they were liberated from Japanese colonial power. So as kind of a mark of their new independence from that, they switched which way they were going. But Japan, despite not being part of the British Empire, does still drive on the left, which goes all the way back to the Edo period for them. So they've just kind of always done their own thing. And they codified it in 1872.
All right. But I did not know that about Japan.
Anyway, so there's all this switching around through history and everybody's doing every which way. And there's political reasons for it. There's practical reasons for it. But I was still curious about which side is safer, especially given in. So a lot of these stories are older. They have to do with horse and buggies and just horses. Right. But what about cars specifically? What is safer? So you were right in a way. So it is documented that left side do have fewer traffic accidents and fatalities than right side, but that's statistically weighted. That's ratioed out. Mm-hmm. So it's not just a quantity thing. It's a frequency. So yeah. In 1969, which is my mother's birth year, a researcher named J.J. Leeming, which is kind of a fun name, did some study into this, trying to figure out why left-hand could be more safe. So he noted that improved safety could be accredited to the fact that humans are more commonly right-eyed. So just like we have right-hand dominant people and left-hand dominant people, there's also right and left eye dominant. We have preferred eyes.
Okay.
And because people who are right-eye dominant in left-hand traffic can detect the presence of oncoming traffic as well as the presence of objects in the driver's wing mirror. So they have a better awareness of their surroundings because they're on the left. When we're in right-handed traffic, like here, that awareness is given to the left eye, which in most people is less adept.
All right. Wow. That's nothing I'd ever thought of before. I did wonder when you asked initially if it did have something to do with being right-handed.
It does also, that's the next point, is about handedness. Because typical automobiles designed for right-hand navigation and manual transmission will have the gear shift on the right side. So it means when you're changing gears, only the left hand is on the steering wheel here in the US. So when we're shifting gears in our cars, which I think we both drive automatics now, but when you're, you know, fiddling around with the radio or doing something with the controls, the air or something, you're using your right hand. We're both right-handed. Yes. And the left hand is doing the more important job of steering.
Right.
But across the world, most people are right-handed. So in all these countries where people are driving on the left side, they have their right hand more able to take care of those things. The right hand able to take care of driving.
Right. That makes sense.
Hey. It sure does.
Really? Yeah.
So this was also a little interesting note. There was a Car Safety Association in Australia that tested right-hand driving cars versus left-hand driving cars for crash tests. And they said that by and large, the left-hand driving cars did function better in the crash test. They were more safe. That was the only reference I could find to that being the case. And they couldn't find like a reason why. So that's a little squishy. Take that with a grain of salt, but I thought that was interesting. Yeah. I wanted to throw it in.
Now, was there a phrase that popped at you? Have we hit the phrase?
That's where we're going to next.
Oh, perfect. Yeah. Perfect.
Because I was going into this, I was thinking about handedness. It's such a weird concept that we have a favorite hand and we have a favorite eye and we have a favorite foot. What's up with that? We don't really know. I looked into it. I was researching this left and right. Hey, hey, hey. And there's just not a lot of good evidence for any reason. There's a lot of stuff of like, oh, maybe ultrasounds make people more likely to be left-handed. Maybe like what the mother eats makes you more likely to be left-handed. Maybe if you're more intelligent, you're left-handed. And like, all this stuff about like right brain, left brain stuff. And none of it seems super solid. So I just decided not to worry about it.
Good. Good. All right.
Yep. I don't think it's a very solid science yet, but it's interesting. Handedness is still interesting. It's fascinating how early it comes up. It's been studied that 39% of infants and 97% of toddlers. So by the time you're 2 years old about, you have a hand preference. It starts that early that you have a side that's preferential. And it's genetically really, really, genetics is an element, right? Mm-hmm. We're pretty sure of how handedness is passed on. But the odds of becoming left-handed through genetics are very, very low. Even if both parents of a child are left-handed, there's only a 26% chance that that child will be left-handed.
Okay.
It's just not a very common thing. They also did a twin study, a pretty large twin study with almost 26,000 families.
That's pretty good.
That's a pretty good sample size. And that indicated that the heritability of handedness is only about 24%.
So they just are. I'm also curious, just the people who are doing this research, and it is definitely interesting, but you do, like, is this something we should be spending a lot of money on? what are the implications? The
pursuit of knowledge, I don't know. That's an interesting question, because from a capitalistic like standpoint, right? It is like, okay, how do we benefit financially from knowing this information? That makes sense to be curious about, but I don't think all scientific study and curiosity needs to be financially motivated.
No, agreed. Agreed. It wasn't that as much of, could they be helping cure cancer? It's just kind of like, is it a good usage of time? Not just expense, but also time. But sometimes you find out interesting things just from, you weren't expecting to discover things, but as they continue to find out more and more about the human brain and how we work, I do think that is important.
Yeah, I think so too. And I think there's, it's possible too in studies like that they were asking more than just one question. Like that is one data finding from the study, but it's possible that there were other aspects and they may have been searching through, especially with that large of a sample size.
Right.
So it's interesting. Also, this is a very weird point. I'm just going to read through this paragraph because this is an interesting point of study that somebody thought to put together this research. So there was a study at Durham University, which examined mortality data for cricketers.
Okay.
So they specifically chose cricketers because their handedness is in the public record. Like when you look up a cricketer, you should know, like, are they right-handed or left-handed? Because that affects their game.
Right.
So they specifically were looking at the mortality data for these cricket players who then went on to become soldiers. So they were looking to see how mortality in soldiers works when it comes to right-handed, left-handed. So they found that left-handed men were almost twice as likely to die in war than their right-handed.
Do they know any idea why?
Yes. So they theorized because most weapons and equipment are designed for right-handed people, which is really wild if you think about it.
Hey, I need the left-handed gun. I need a left-handed grenade. The world, it's a right-handed world. It's a world made for right-handed people.
So a journalist of the time said, "I can sympathize with all those left-handed cricketers who have gone to an early grave trying desperately to shoot straight with a right-handed Lee Enfield .303. It's just a very specific pull quote.
Yeah, you know, there's some things that, you know, it's like, oh, a lot of different people could have said that thing. No, this is a very specific, wildly specific quote.
That journalist was at the center of a very specific Venn diagram.
Yeah.
There was an American study that found that left-handed U.S. sailors were 34% more likely to have a serious accident than right-handed counterparts. So it can be a dangerous world at war for left-handed people, especially.
And they also found out that people who become soldiers, their mortality rate goes down quite a bit. Just becoming a soldier and fighting in wars actually affects your mortality quite a bit, whether you're right-handed or left-handed.
Yeah, that is true.
A lot of studies have gone into that.
Again, I will quote my literature war professor. War fucking sucks.
It does. I've never fought in a war, but no. I 100% believe that.
I don't plan to.
No. If you and I are fighting in a war, something's gone horribly wrong.
Yes.
And who are we fighting? That's what I want to know.
That is a good question. Hopefully we never have to find out.
Yeah, agreed.
So, and that makes me want to ask you, though, how good do you think you would be in a zombie apocalypse question?
Not very good. I think I'd whine a lot. Zombies? I'm so sick of the zombies. I just want to go to the movies. You know, I have friends who have lots of guns and weaponry. I have a couple hammers. I don't really have weapons. If I get attacked, I'm in trouble.
Okay. Yeah. If you are in a zombie apocalypse and you need to join like a roving gang of like survivors, what's your selling point? What do you tell them to get them to let you join?
I'm going to die. No one's going to take the fat older white guy. He's going to eat too much of our supplies. Look at him. But on the plus side, when the zombies attack, they're going to get me before they get you.
Oh, you're taking the human shield approach.
Yeah, but I won't actually. I'll push someone else down.
Oh, I see. So it'll be a short-lived connection. So you're just jumping from horde to horde, like
I'm a survivor. I'm a survivor. I will entertain you at night with bad accents and maybe some stories and some bad jokes.
I think there's merit in that.
I'm like the bard no one wanted.
I would read a comic book called The Bard No One Wanted. Sounds like a children's book.
I'd read that screenplay. How about you? How would you do in the zombie apocalypse?
I feel like I don't have a lot of good like weaponry skills or fighting skills. Like I'm pretty good at shooting guns. I just don't have any.
You are?
Yeah.
How do you even know that?
Because I have done some shooting of guns recreationally. Right. I am from Michigan.
Cousin's house, I think.
Yes. Yep. Yeah. And I still remember when I was like 12, we were doing shooting. We were out behind their house out in the woods, shooting, and they had a sawhorse set up, you know, like across the field. Yep. And had golf balls on tees on top of the sawhorse, and I went and shot the tees out from underneath the golf balls. And I don't think my grandpa has ever loved me more before or since.
Yeah, it's not possible. You peaked.
Yeah,
it's tough to peak with your grandpa's love at 12, though. You kind of want to measure that out a little more.
Anyway, we are wildly off course, but my zombie skills. I think I have a lot of good apocalypse skills in that I have gardening experience. I can sew, I can knit, I can cook. So I have some very useful skills, even if they are not like violent skills.
I could tell people a lot about Spider-Man.
You could, in fact, do that, which is an important skill, because if all the Spider-Man comics get burned away, people have to know.
They need to know about Gwen Stacy and some of his great foes, like the Ringer.
Who
shot rings. He shot rings that could constrict around you. Bands, the Ringer. He was not a tough foe.
No.
Spider-Man beat him quite handily.
I was thinking he'd be like wrestling themed because they've got like the ring.
No.
Okay.
It's not the direction they went, or the big wheel, the guy who rode around in a really big wheel, or the rocket racer who had a rocket powered skateboard.
Wait, there was a hamster man?
No, he wasn't a hamster. I'm sure there's a hamster man somewhere. Anyway, again, wildly off course. No one wants to hear about Spider-Man's D-list villains.
I mean, I do. I would listen to a whole episode about that. But for now, let's get back on the hand.
I'll do it. Do not threaten me.
I would. I would have fun with that.
I'll do it.
Okay. So, anyway, so right and left. Obviously, we all know that left-handed has had a really like negative connotation throughout the years, due in no small part to the etymology. We are getting to the etymology, I promise. So, in a lot of different languages, including ours, English, the word for right also means correct. You just did it earlier. Yes. You made a joke about it. Like, right. Right. While in the original Latin, sinister, a word which today means like dark, evil, that kind of thing, it meant left originally.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, sinister means left. Your sinister hand is your left hand. There's that's in Shakespeare, sinister hand, referring to the left.
It's because you'd wipe your bum with it.
I don't think that's it, but
it is, because then you'd never shake hands with someone on their left hand because that was their bum wiping hand.
Oh, well, that's fair. I don't know if that's connected to sinister specifically, but like, please don't shake hands with your bum wiping hand, especially during times when we didn't wash our hands.
Yeah. They didn't have hand sanitizer as much back then. So, or toilet paper.
They probably just like spit in it. But so we had this very,
hope you're eating lunch right now.
Yeah, we definitely get into some gross things sometimes.
Enjoy.
But there's this dichotomy being drawn of like the right is good and light, and the left is sinister and evil.
In that voice too, sinister and evil. I like it.
And even in, so you know the word gauche? What does gauche mean?
That's gauche. It's kind of gross. It's, you know, socially like tacky kind of a thing.
Did you know that gauche is just the French word for left?
Nope.
Yep. So another instance, we're just
French bastards.
We're using left, a word that means left, to just mean like bad.
Kind of gross. So,
poor left-handed people. And what poor people who have two left feet. We found our phrase.
Wow, there you go. Okay, you got
the most convoluted road.
No, Milo, you got there.
Left feet. I mean, we were talking about transportation. We were talking about handedness and footedness. Mm-hmm. And now we got here to two left feet. What does two left mean, my father?
You can't dance. You're stumbling all over yourself. You know, you're clumsy. Left is bad.
Right, because left is bad and less capable, right?
Right.
So when you have two left feet, you just literally can't dance because you don't know what you're doing. So this goes all the way back to, I have a specific date. I love when there's a specific date.
Oh.
The 18th of March in 1916, a short story was published called The Man with Two Left Feet by English author Pelham Greenville Wodehouse.
Oh, beautiful.
Beautiful name. Beautiful name. And I actually have a little clipping of this story of the man with two left feet. He was now in a position to devote an hour a day to the lessons, and Madame Gavarni had said that that would be ample. Sure, Bill, she had said. She was a breezy old lady with a military mustache in an unconventional manner with her clientele. You come to me an hour a day, and if you haven't two left feet, we'll make sure you're the pet of society within a month. Is that so? It sure is. I've never had a failure yet with a pupil, except one, and that wasn't my fault. Had he two left feet? Hadn't any feet at all. Fell off a roof after the second lesson and had to have them cut off him. And at that, could have learned him how to tango with wooden legs, only he got kind of discouraged. Well, see you Monday, Bill. Be good.
See you Monday. Tell you the most depressing story ever. The failure, it wasn't my fault because the guy fell off a roof and they amputated his legs. But we still could have made it work, but he gave up. I don't know why.
Well, right.
That's the story I'm telling as the bard traveling from horde to horde, surviving the zombies. That's the story I'm telling.
Yep. No, I think it's a very good story. This character fascinates me. Madame Gravati. Yeah.
She's fantastic.
She's very brusque. But obviously, like we talk about so often in this podcast, this phrase is used so comfortably in this story without explanation. It's clear that it's already been in use for quite a while. So we can actually trace it back a little bit earlier. And there's actually an earlier iteration that's two left hands. So it, this phrase actually started out as two left hands and then kind of transferred into being two left feet. So we actually have an earlier example. Again, we have a specific date, which is Friday, the 8th, December, 1815. There was an example in The Courier, which was an extract talking about English women from a French army officer. So this French army officer basically wrote this thing about how English women suck.
Yeah, this is not going to be flattering.
It got published in The Courier in London to just kind of be like, aren't these Frenchmen awful? So here's what this Frenchman said. Do you want to read it in your French accent?
Hold on, let me. The French accent. Yes, par la vue. I have to get into it. The awkwardness of all in dress and manner being the same, it would be wrong to expect to distinguish the ranks of society by ease or decorum of manners. English women in general, no matter of what condition, are destitute of grace and taste, and one may literally say that an English woman has two left hands.
Beautiful.
You like that?
Beautiful. Yes.
My wife is cringing. I'm sure if she could hear any of that.
This is a very rude passage. And also, I thought it was interesting because it's an early example of people using literally in a hyperbolic way, which people see as like a very modern thing. But this is an example from 1815 where somebody's like, she literally has two left hands. I don't think they do. But
no, clearly.
Yeah, just so you know. That was not the case. But yeah, so there you go. There's your little unexpected flavor of phrase etymology, what this podcast is supposed to be about. But I took the long road to get there.
Sometimes it's the road less traveled, Milo. That's exactly. Worth traveling. And we traveled that today, Frost. Dear listener. Dear listener, thank you for traveling with us in the road less traveled, getting to that two left feet phrase. Now you know.
I feel like I need to put like an AB radio crackle over your voice because you sound like one of those late night trucker broadcast hosts.
That's who I am in another life. I am the late night trucker broadcast host. For all you lonely souls out there driving Highway 66, just remember, drink your Ovaltine and drive on the left side of the road. The right hand side of the road. I want them all to die. I'm in English. And remember, all you drivers driving the big rig. I'm so sorry. I'll stop. Forgive me.
I feel like that could be like a good concept for a horror podcast, though, is like a dark, evil late night radio broadcaster who's trying siren lure people off the road.
Let's write it. I like
Perfect. Awesome. Yeah. Okay. Well, thanks for sticking with us through that one that kind of broke our format a bit. But to be honest, we break our format every third week here on the Watch Your Mouth podcast.
All the time.
And we appreciate you being along with us on this path of destruction. We surely do. We hope that you enjoyed the podcast. If you did, please leave us a review on your podcast platform of choice or on our Facebook group. You can search Watch Your Mouth on there to join and see pictures from this episode and other episodes and get updated about episode releases. You can email us at watchyourmouthpod@gmail.com with questions, comments, corrections, all that kind of thing. And thank you to Tony Gebhardt for our theme song. We will be back soon with another episode. But in the meantime, I'm Milo.
And I'm Dave.
Stay curious and carry a hatchet.